Explaining football to the friend who's just there for the nachos? Hard. Tailgating from home like a pro with snacks and drinks everyone will love? An easy win. And with Instacart helping deliver the snack time MVPs to your door, you're ready for the game in as fast as 30 minutes. So you never miss a play or lose your seat on the couch or have to go head-to-head for the last chicken wing. Shop game day faves on Instacart and enjoy $0 delivery fees on your first three grocery orders. Offer valid for a limited time. Other fees and terms apply.
Hey, football fans, you want the real deal? The raw, unfiltered truth about everything going down in the NFL? Join Mark Schlereth, three-time Super Bowl champ, on the Stinkin' Truth podcast. He's breaking it all down for you. No punches pulled. From the game-changing moments that won or lost a game to the player evaluations, this is analysis you won't hear anywhere else. Mark's got you covered. So strap in and get ready for the ride, because this isn't your average football podcast. Follow the Stinkin' Truth in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
With the local football team having a bright future, having a new quarterback, it's time for you to plan your future as well. The exclusive sponsor of our show, the law firm Condorian Murad, can help you update your last will and testament, set up a trust for you or your family. They can do the important hard stuff that isn't fun to think about. Schedule a free consultation with our estate planning attorneys today. Visit kmlawyers.com. Be sure to tell them Grant and Danny sent you so you can get a discount. KMLawyers.com. It is time to blitz the East. We start you off in Dallas with the Cowboys and Babe Laufenberg of Cowboys Radio Network, who joins us on G&D. Babe, after week one, the Cowboys were flying pretty high. What they did to the Cleveland Browns was impressive. And then week two comes along and the New Orleans Saints smack them in the mouth. What happened this past weekend?
I wish I could tell you, but everything happened. The beauty of the game, like that they had against the Saints, is there's no finger pointing, right? Sometimes the offense is looking at the defense sideways. Sometimes it's vice versa, but the defense got mauled and the offense wasn't very good either. And yeah, when you look at after week one, Cleveland had one first down in the first half. I mean, the Cowboys just totally dominated Cleveland in that game. Mike Zimmer, the new defensive coordinator, former Vikings head coach, of course. You know, he was the assistant coach of the year after week one. Now, you know, the Saints come in and just, they ran it when they wanted. They threw it when they wanted. And, hey, I'm very fond of former Cowboys head coach Jason Garrett would always say, the history of the NFL is written week to week. And that's very true through 2 weeks for the Cowboys.
What do you expect this weekend against Baltimore? Tough matchup for an 0-2 team.
Yeah, honestly, I don't look at Baltimore as an 0-2 team. You know, you saw the Kansas City game. But receivers out of bounds by a back of the end zone by a half an inch. That game may have been different. The Raiders game, they had some 24-yard shank punt at the end of the game on the final drive that gave the Raiders a ball. So, no, when I see Baltimore, you know, I see what everybody else sees. Great defense. I mean, it seems like since John Harbaugh has been there, They played great defense. And obviously Lamar Jackson, reigning MVP, Derrick Henry back there. I mean, Zay Taylor now at receiver. They finally got a weapon out there. I don't look at them, and I'm sure the Cowboys don't look at them, as an 0-2 football team.
Babe, what's the running back situation going to look like in Dallas in a month? Is Dowdle or Elliott the guy?
Well, it's a good question. And they also have Dalvin Cook here, who was not activated last week. We'll see what the first 2 weeks, excuse me. He came late. They signed him basically the right before the season started. We'll see what he has. But it's, you know, it's running back by committee, as they say. And it's, I think that is similar to when you say, well, we have two good quarterbacks. That means you have none, right? So they've got a committee of backs, and some are unproven. And Zeke Elliott is obviously at the backside of his career. So it's going to be interesting to see how well they can run the ball, not only against Baltimore, but throughout the season. And then you add to that, they've got two rookie offensive linemen playing. The center is a rookie and the left tackle is a rookie. Both good players, but as we all know, it takes a little time to develop there.
Similar question. Outside of CeeDee Lamb, Babe, who's the number two? Tolbert, six catches this past week. It was Brandon Cooks, the guy in week one. He was non-existent in week two. Is Tolbert going to be maybe the second option to Lamb, do you think, at wide receiver?
Well, I'm a fan of Brandon Cooks. I really am. He can still run. You know, he came into the league as a 4-3 guy, first round draft pick for New Orleans, and he is still a really good route runner. Still has, I think, most of his speed. We all slow down just a shade, maybe, but I think he can. I think he can be a solid number two. Tolbert is a guy, third round pick from a couple of years ago. He's just now starting to get in there and play, but he did. He was one of the few bright spots last week against the Saints. He had himself. Definitely was his best game as a Cowboy.
What do you think the expectations are, big picture, for this Dallas team, babe? And I bring it up because, you know, externally, I think people expected them to take a bit of a step back, still be pretty good, better than the bottom two teams in the division here in New York, but, you know, maybe behind Philadelphia in the pecking order. Through a couple of weeks, nobody's really distinguished themselves just yet. What do you think, big picture, this year the expectations are for Dallas?
Well, the expectation here is always the Super Bowl, but then the reality is they don't make it to the NFC Championship game and haven't for the last 28 years. But I think every city, as you guys know, for the most part, maybe not in New York, but the expectation is you're going to be a playoff team. We've made these changes in the offseason, and we're going to be better. We got this quarterback. Whatever the case may be, everybody has high hopes at the start of the season. Then the season starts, and you find out if those high hopes were justified or not. But there's no question the Cowboys lost a lot of good players from last year's team, did not replace them with equivalent guys. Now, that doesn't mean we talked about Jalen Tolbert. You know, he didn't see a whole lot of playing time last year. Michael Gallup goes to the Raiders and ultimately retires after this season, or before the season started. And now Jalen Tolbert's got his opportunity. The two young offensive linemen that I talked about, the two rookies that are playing. You know, they're going to look different in week 12 than they looked in week one. So I think there's still an expectation. Here's the thing I always look at. Okay, they've got a great quarterback in my mind in Dak Prescott. They've got a great pass rusher in Micah Parsons. And they've got a great receiver in CeeDee Lamb. So when you've got those three elements in this league, to me, that's a really good foundation. And so, and they have those, and they also have, you know, really good corner in Trayvon Diggs, and they're going to get Deron Bland, who led the NFL in interceptions last year. They're going to get him back about week 4 or 5.
Gives you a pretty high floor, no doubt about it. Babe Laufenberg, Cowboys Radio Network, at Babe Laufenberg on Twitter. Thank you. We appreciate you.
Oh, hey, thanks for having me on. Thank you, guys. Have a great day.
You too.
Our pleasure. Thank you. Let's keep the blitz of the East moving. The Eagles, Danny, coming off of a Monday Night Football loss that you just can't have against the Atlanta Falcons. They led this game by 3. We're on the move, ready to make it a 2-possession game in the waning 2 minutes. Instead, settled for a field goal, made it a 6-point game, and then gave up what was an elementary drive down the field. Kirk Cousins with real estate, downfield shots to wide receivers. Just an epic collapse for Philadelphia to lose to the Falcons in week 2.
A gut-punching, you know, galling loss if you're an Eagles fan or part of that organization.
How much do you blame Nick Sirianni?
A lot.
Called a pass on 3rd and 3. I didn't mind that because it was a drop on an open play that was well-designed to Barkley. They didn't go for the ensuing 4th and 3. They kicked the field goal. Then whatever defense they were in, you could blame Vic Fangio for, but he's the head coach. They also didn't take field goals early in the game, went for 4th downs they didn't get. Just felt like a Sirianni failure in this game.
Yeah, it's like we're going to be one of the things you talk about all the time when you play blackjack, right? If you play a certain way, like you play by the book, you don't just on whims stop doing that. In other words, then you've lowered your odds. If you play by the book 10 times, you're more likely to win more often than you lose. And you get these like gut feelings where we're going for this 4th down, but we're not going for the next one. You either got to do it every time, as the case presents itself, or you don't, and you run the risk of what happened here. Like, they made the worst decision every time, it seemed. If they were just normal and kicked the field goal early on and just ran it twice when they're inside of 2 minutes with Atlanta only having 1 timeout left, almost every scenario, there's a reason why those win-predicting stats and algorithms had them well into the upper 90s for the best chance to win the game. There was one scenario, and that's what happened.
There was a 0.7% chance,
yeah,
according to the analytic model on ESPN, I think it was, that the Falcons were going to win before the 3rd and 3. 0.7.
Mm-hmm.
And they won the game. It's just hard to fathom. Another thing I saw that was weird to me about Sirianni, he did not address the team after the game. Jalen Hurts did. He does not call plays on offense. He does not call plays on defense. and apparently isn't talking to the team after the loss in the locker room.
The Ron Rivera school of addressing.
I was going to say, have we heard of this before? What is it you would say you do here? Some positive thoughts on the Eagles. I thought Jalen Hurts was excellent in this game. He finished 23 of 30 for a buck 80, a touchdown, and a pick. The interception was on the final drive after they gave the lead away, getting hit as he threw, trying to make something happen. But prior to that, he was actually moving and shaking, and he had a great game running the football. Looked like his old self from a couple years ago. Saquon Barkley makes them a lot more dynamic. He had the big drop, I get that. But he has been a game changer for them through 2 weeks offensively. He's added a lot. Ran for 95 yards this past week. And Jahan Dotson got to play a bunch because A.J. Brown is out. He'll be out again this week. And despite playing most of the game and being their second wide receiver in terms of routes run, he had just one catch for 6 yards for Philly. They gave up a third-round pick for him.
Yeah, so he not involved yet, but maybe he will be later. I don't know. I mean, to me, I know the Eagles get positivity is not really what Philadelphia is known for, but I would still feel pretty decent. I had the bones of a win. I should have had one. I'll be annoyed that my head coach probably screwed me out of that one. But that's without A.J. Brown, who's among the three or four best receivers probably right now playing in football. That is a huge gain when he comes back and is able to go. And he was, in all likelihood, is going to be good to go for the rest of the year.
I did not realize they play the Saints on Sunday.
Yeah.
4 days from now. Clary, grab me the betting line if you could on that game.
Saints Buccaneers bye. They have an early bye week as well.
So I believe it's at 2.5 right now.
Who's favored?
It'll be the Eagles.
The Eagles are favored at New Orleans? A 2-0 Saints team by 2.5 points?
Never mind. It's the Saints are favored by 2.5.
That makes a lot more sense. So Eagles catching 2.5. I was going to say, that line makes no sense. I think the Eagles win this game. Is that weird?
No.
I've not been that impressed by the Eagles. It just feels like another shoe is ultimately going to drop for New Orleans.
Yeah, they're not going to be beating teams by 35 points per week. So at some point, someone will figure something out maybe here or there. Who knows? I don't necessarily see Philadelphia going in there to New Orleans and winning. I see them being more competitive, certainly, than the New Orleans' first two opponents have been. Opponents, I'm sure that's a word. Opponents have been. So I would probably lean New Orleans. I think Philadelphia, though, if you see them again in 5-6 weeks, will be a better team than they are right now.
Yeah, pass rush for them defensively has been ugly at this point, though. They've gotten next to nothing out of their defensive line. I think they had one sack of Kirk Cousins, who's 2 games back from an Achilles. Can't move that well. They didn't really move him around a whole lot. A week after the Falcons got destroyed by Pittsburgh's pass rush, I mean, they looked like they were, yawning and just enjoying themselves against Philadelphia. So the Eagles, Saints this weekend, we are blitzing the East on Grant and Danny. Let's get to our third and final team. And for the New York Giants this weekend, they're just trying to get off the schneid. It's 0-2. People's jobs are going to get called into question if you can't get a win. And this is a winnable game at the Cleveland Browns for the Giants. 1 o'clock kickoff on Sunday. But Cleveland did look a lot better. Deshaun Watson bounced back this past week.
31st in points scored, 35th in points allowed. Well on their way to being one of the worst teams in the NFL. It's a struggle on both sides of the ball for them right now. Those defensive numbers would be worse, by the way, if Washington could punch it into one of their 6 red zone trips. They'd be down there close to 31 or 32. There's not much they do well, not much to hang your hat on at this point if you are part of that Giants organization. But yeah, this to me is about survival, as you said. They need something positive at some point to validate all their decision making and sort of these approaches. This is the third year of their build, right? If you're down here, if Washington is, like they're playing a competitive game with the Giants, if we're in that place in 3 years, people should have their key cards revoked and go find employment elsewhere. But that's where they are in this build, and they're a disaster.
This is how you get fired. I'm not saying Dable will, but this is how it would happen. Your first year, you go 9-7-1. Your second year, last season, you went 6-11. And then this year, now at 0-2, you have a really disappointing, bad season.
5-12 kind of a deal.
That would be a one-way ticket, I would think, to figuring out how to get fired.
Yeah, to fired town. That's where we are. I mean, there's no unit for them. I mean, Malik Nambers is a star. He's fun. He's exciting. I'm intrigued like everybody else is, especially from a fantasy perspective or even daily fantasy. But there's not much happening here on either side of the ball that's consistent.
Charlotte Carroll of The Athletic, who covers the Giants, joins us to help us break them down as we blitz the East on Grant and Danny. How surprised are you by this 0-2 start and how things have looked for them on both sides of the ball?
Hey, thanks so much for having me on. I don't think anyone's too surprised based on what we saw this summer. We all kind of thought they'd at least be 1-1 heading into this matchup against the Browns, but it's not too surprising knowing some of the deficiencies that were there and watching them throughout the summer.
I do feel like Malik Nabers having a monster game's got to make people feel better. Daniel Jones went from, oh my God, you got to bench him, to a pretty decent game this weekend. I mean, those seem like encouraging signs, no?
Yeah, no, it's definitely something to be excited about in the future. Malik Nabers played a monster game, 18 targets. The next Giants receiver had 4. So he's clearly a huge part of this offense. You saw that throughout the whole training camp. And just to kind of see it come together and see how competitive he is and how hard he took that missed catch, the drop, is encouraging, especially as a Giants fan, if you're watching that.
Charlotte, over the last few years, I know the rankings aren't particularly kind to the Giants, but I felt it in moments, they've had a fairly decent defense, right? Starting with that group up front, they've been able to kind of bother teams. I know Washington's offense has been pretty terrible, and they've taken advantage of that, certainly. There have been some gaudy point totals against them, but in general, I feel like that defense has been decent, if not even pretty good at times. It doesn't feel that way through two games, though. It feels like it's like the kid in front of a leaky dam just trying to plug holes, and there's always a new one springing up. Doesn't feel like they can really take anything away at this point.
Yeah, no, I mean, they've got the new coordinator, Shane Bowen, coming from Tennessee, so they're learning, or they've kind of implemented his scheme, see what happens. It's very different than Wink Martindale's blitz heavy. So that was always, frustrating quarterback through his two seasons here. And so now we've got Shane, where there's more emphasis up front, kind of harking back to the old pass rush of yore of the Giants yesteryear. Kayvon Thibodeau, Brian Burns, huge free agent trade acquisition this spring. They were pretty quiet in the first game, a little bit more active this go around against Washington. But still, they had their moments in the sun in the red zone and forcing Washington to kick the 7 field goals rather than score a touchdown.
Yeah, I couldn't believe to that point. Like, Dexter Lawrence didn't do anything on the stat sheet other than make 4 tackles. They really didn't generate a lot of pressure. Should we feel good about Washington handling them that way and feel like that's a sign that the Commanders might be pretty good up front, or are they just not really playing that well as a defensive line yet?
I think you can kind of view it as both. I think I lean more towards that they're not as cohesive yet. They're still kind of figuring it out, and they need to do it very quickly if they want to turn the season around and move on from 0-2. But I lean more that than Washington. But you never know.
Tough to figure out which Cleveland Browns team is going to show up here week to week, but what are your thoughts on this game this weekend?
Yeah, it's a must win. I know that sounds like a ridiculous thing to say in week 3, and we were saying it in week 2 that it was a must win. But it's just kind of, it's hard to see them really having success with the teams that are on their upcoming schedule, the Giants schedule. I don't know. It's going to be tough, and you're going into the Browns, looking at the injury report that came out. We'll see who all plays. But yeah, it's going to be a tough challenge for sure with Myles Garrett and that kind of pressure. That was a lot more are a lot harder to deal with than what Washington generated, I'd say, last weekend.
Charlotte Carroll covers the Giants for The Athletic. Thank you for the time. We appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having me on.
Yeah, absolutely. You got it. Thank you. That is how we blitz the East on Grant and Danny. In 40 minutes at 6 o'clock, we'll give away tickets to the Caps 50 Fest. Make sure you're listening if you want those. Next, there was a Commanders player who had a way better game on Sunday than you realize. This is The Fan.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
If you want the real story behind the NFL, you need the Stinkin' Truth Podcast. Three-time Super Bowl champ Mark Schlereth breaks down the biggest plays, the biggest games, and the untold stories that make this game what it is. Follow the Stinkin' Truth in the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress-them-on-the-third-date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Danny, the Commander, who had a better game than anybody realized on Sunday, Luke McCaffrey. Why, you ask?
Yeah, why?
Completely uninvolved. Not catching passes. Not targeted. Because he was running free. You go back and you watch the All-22. There's a few plays where you're going, ooh, good route, kid. Oh, okay. Showing me something there. PFF dropped this. Our buddy Nick Ackridge actually alluded to this today, and I saw what they wrote up on it. He was number four in the NFL in separation percentage this weekend. And through 2 weeks, he's number three. Through two games, he's number three in the NFL in separation percentage. So just week two, minimum of six routes where he would have had a chance to catch a ball. Chris Olave of the Saints, who's outstanding. Michael Wilson of the Cardinals and DeMarcus Robinson of the Rams were the only guys who had snaps with separation at a higher rate. 87% of his routes that he ran, he separated on. 7 of 8. Now, you can't throw yourself the ball. You cannot do anything to get the football other than go out there, do what you're assigned to do, get free. He did that 7 out of 8 times on his routes.
How about that? That's a good nugget. And, you know, a lot of those, a couple of those guys have not really broken out yet. And as the Saints have scored 2 trillion points, Chris Olave's had pretty pedestrian totals, but it just lets you know that when they need it, they'll be able to go to that guy. And hopefully Washington makes that adjustment.
This is one of the areas where Daniels is going to have to work a little bit to improve. We've talked a lot on the show, including in our first hour, if you missed it, some of the things we love, some of the things we've seen that we like about him so far. The idea of just, it's going to come with being more of a natural passer. Involving your receivers more, giving them a chance, like the McCaffrey thing. Mm-hmm. If he's open at that clip, we got to start looking for him. We got to start trying to get the ball in his hands, right? If you look at the Commanders' wide receivers so far this season, this is from Hayden Winks of Underdog. Commanders' wide receivers aren't getting the rock. Look no further than a league low 29% target rate when Jaden Daniels faces pressure. The league average is 60%. So when a quarterback is pressured, on average, wide receivers get targeted 60% of the time. Meaning, there's some throwaways, there's some sacks.
There's your hot routes. Yeah,
you might check the ball to a running back. So 40% of the time, you throw it to somebody else and or the play does not end up with a target. But 60% of the time, the average quarterback, when pressured, throws the ball to a wide receiver. The Commanders, again, only 2 games, but it's only 2 games for all the positive stuff we're talking about, too.
Totally.
At a 30% rate, their wide receivers are getting targeted on those plays. Half of what the average quarterback is doing. So I think that's really interesting. And when we're talking about, like, where are the numbers for McCaffrey or Terry or whoever, the flip side is 77% of the time when Jared Goff is pressured, he throws to a wide receiver. 29% for Washington. Well, clearly they're going to get more targets, more catches, more yards.
Yeah,
in Detroit.
No, sure. Yeah, there's a trust factor there too, right? Where you see some of these things, you see enough times on film where there's not enough time to process and go, okay, this is where the defender's coming from. Now I'm looking over here. Luke McCaffrey, if I give him a moment, will break open and free. Those are wonderful plays. That can be fun if you have time to do that. Sometimes there's a trust. You know, sometimes there's that Taylor Heineke bleep it. McCorn's down there somewhere type play, right? Where I bet you Jared Goff knows, like, just like the back of his hand, on this play at this time, if I'm in doubt, I don't have to whip around and assess the whole thing on the defense. I can throw it to an area, and I bet you Amon-Ra St. Brown will make me right. I bet you LaPorta will make me right, and so on. That comes with experience, right? This is all very new, both being a pro and being in this offense. You go now, if we're still doing this where McCaffrey's open 90% of the time, whatever the hell the numbers say, in 2 months, and it's like, dude, somebody throw him the ball. it'll be more of a conversation point to me as a knock. This is still, we're learning that, right? Where there's a trust factor that has to happen, where Cousins used to, when he would come on with this, would talk about a receiver would make me right.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And we were talking about that with Josh Doctson, ironically, at the time, but you would go, he's not open yet, but I got to throw it before he is, knowing that he will be.
Just for instruction, so these are the numbers compared to league average under pressure so far for Daniel. So 60% league average, you know, target a receiver, 29% we talked about. Scramble percentage league average when you're pressured is 8%. So out of every 100, you know, pressured plays, eight times the average quarterback takes off.
Gotcha. I bet you Washington's a little higher.
36%.
Yeah, there you go.
So almost five times the average of turning a pressure into a scramble. As far as sacks go, the average quarterback so far this year, this is the old pressure to sack percentage everybody got annoyed by.
Mm-hmm.
18% of pressures turned into sacks through 2 weeks in the NFL. For Daniels, it's 32%, which, you know, again, is a high number, but I'm not going to harp on it so far because mostly the sacks have been losses of just a few. It you know, there's a couple zeros and ones in there on runs, basically. It hasn't been a ton of, you know, minus seven, minus eight.
Behind the drive killing, devastating, totally. No chance for anything.
Yeah. We can have a different combo if that changes. Throwaways, we heard Mitch Tischler of Monumental say when he joined us, hey, I want to see Daniels throw it away a little bit more. The average quarterback, when pressured, throws it away 9% of the time so far. Daniels is at 4%, so about half of average. And then the other one that would be interesting would be targets. And we kind of alluded to that and talked about where the receiver part of it is, at least. So I think that's just instructive. I do think the key to me is he has avoided back-breaking plays. Everyone has harped on the interceptions. Interceptions you can explain away with a lack of touchdowns. Generally, if you have a really low interception count, I'm going to bet you're not making a whole lot of plays pushing the ball down the field. And 0-0 is pretty telling. It's the lack of bad plays, though. I watch Caleb Williams. He's trying to do too much and taking a stupid sack or losing the football or whatever it is.
That's right.
Jaden Daniels hasn't really done that. I think his speed has kind of bailed him out, where if you run like Caleb Williams or Bo Nix, just a normal level of athleticism, maybe someone catches you and drags you down. But he's been able to play Superman a little bit. And so far, it's been good.
Yeah. I mean, and again, that's the asset you've got over nearly everybody else, not named Lamar Jackson and maybe Justin Fields. So, yeah, I mean, it's the kind of thing also that I'm hoping that the coaching staff is recognizing. I'm hoping that the offensive folks are getting together and going, okay, this is actually something we can call. This isn't just a gimmick. This isn't just Luke McCaffrey's out there to catch one screen pass, and then he's basically a glorified blocker as a slot guy or kind of rotating X, Z, whatever. We can actually utilize this and make defenses cover more than just a quick bubble or smoke screen. We can actually do some things here that Daniels is comfortable with, that our receivers are capable of doing. Because at some point, you cannot have Terry McLaurin on pace for 340 yards, whatever the hell it is, through two games. Because that's what he's on pace for.
When do you start looking at the on-pace stats and really caring a lot?
Not yet. I'm just sort of offering context.
I'm not arguing with you. I'm just asking. Because for me, I think it's normally, it used to be for me like the quarter pole. Normally 4 out of 16. I don't know if it's because of the 17 games or whatever. I'm now like 5 or 6.
My number. Yeah, where I kind of go, this is now a trend. It can be bucked. It can be changed.
Sure.
Which is, we've seen with McLaurin, slow starts for a couple times.
But if 5 games happen and it's similar results, that's enough to say. I mean, you're talking about a third of the season almost. This is more than just, hey, things haven't worked out, or we've gotten lucky one way or the other,
yeah,
right? It's like, this is what it is.
Yeah, instead of like, oh, that was a weird game, and so a couple of weird games in a row, or that's unusual, this is now what we're dealing with. So the point of me bringing it up is not to, it's a larger discussion that I think we'll have, but the reason I bring it up is to say they've got to get receiver production. And not like, oh, at some point, really soon. Even if it's just for show, because what you want to do is major in Robinson, Eckler, and Ertz. You want to get back to that, that's fine. People are going to start keying on those sorts of things. Like, you got to find a way to have some of those chunk plays to get some yards after the catch, just to make it easier on you in the offense.
The Commanders are the number 10 rushing offense in the NFL right now in terms of yards per play in game. I would have actually thought it was a little bit higher than that. They've been great running the ball, 5.79 yards per attempt, which tells you a lot about how well teams have run it and how easily the running game seems to become. Mm-hmm. The Saints, as an example, what is this, the Big 12? They're averaging 6.9 yards per carry through two games. The Vikings are averaging 6.8. The Colts are averaging 6.7. The Packers, 6.4. The Cardinals, 6.2.
And it goes to what we were talking about earlier with passing offense down because teams are in these looks where they're six in the box and they're going light. So it's like, fine, I'll run it right down your throat.
A lot of it, too, is I you can't say this for everyone because Derek Carr is certainly not a threat to run.
Mm-hmm.
But the Colts with Richardson, the Packers with Malik Willis for half of the time, the Cardinals with Kyler Murray, the Ravens with Lamar Jackson, and the Commanders with Jaden Daniels and the Bills with Josh Allen, all, what did I say, six or seven teams?
Yeah.
All of them in the top 10 in rushing have quarterbacks you've got to account for running the football. It's just an absolute game changer in terms of defending the run if I need to stay honest or Jaden Daniels can rip off 30.
Yeah, you can have a great run game like the Chargers do under Jim Harbaugh or, you know, Detroit does with Jared Goff and company. It's harder to do that. That's a lot of moving parts. Get the line
right.
Yeah, get my scheme right. Get my targets right. Get my rhythm right. Or, as you said, here's the cheat code. That's all nice. You guys got all those decisions right. I didn't listen to that. My quarterback's faster than your guy. So we'll just go ahead and have a top 10 rush offense.
As good as they've been, I think it'll just keep getting better. I believe in Robinson having a huge year. I love what I've seen from Eckler. I think he is, like, even though all offseason, you and I felt like there was a lot left in the tank, and I thought people saying he was done were overrating it a little bit because he was hurt last year. And then when he came back, he was still banged up, but also there was no Herbert. It was like Easton Stick.
Mm-hmm.
So it was just stacking the box, running against eight. He's been better than I expected. I had high hopes, but I think he even looks better than what I was thinking. So those things coupled with Daniels, I think it's going to be there for them a lot this season. Now, what's going to happen inevitably is that teams are going to say, not today. And you're not going to be able to run it. And now mm-hmm. it's time for Daniels, if they can keep him in the pocket, good luck. I don't know if they will be able to, but to force him to throw the football, and then we'll see what happens. But in the short term, I don't know. And it's way harder to do that because of his run game abilities, as we saw in 2012.
My worry is that the Giants are that bad. And so what we're taking as, man, Washington can really do this, I worry that it might be more like week one against Tampa, where Robinson went 12 for 40. You know, and the rushing yards were Daniels' scrambles, not so much what was designed and given to them. I'm hoping this was a growth week, right? And it's not just that the Giants stink. Again, the proof will be in the pudding, right? If I'm not saying you rush for 200-some yards a week. This isn't, you know, 1992 Nebraska. But I'm hoping that they're taking some steps here, and you add enough versatility in this offense, and that run game will be there for them. I'm hopeful.
The Patriots are 16th against the run so far. Isaiah Pacheco last week averaged about 5 a pop. Mahomes scrambled for 7 yards per carry, so there could be some real estate there for the quarterback. They didn't run it as well after the Pacheco injury with Carson Steele, about 3 yards per carry for the fullback. In week one, if you're curious about the Bengals, they played New England, which is a little more, I'd say, like Washington in terms of their receiving threats and not having Patrick Mahomes.
Right.
And in that game, the Patriots grounded and pounded them. Ramondre Stevenson, 25 for 120. Antonio Gibson had 7 carries for 20 yards. They ran it 32 times, and Jacoby Brissett scrambled 7 times. So it was like a 40
carry.
So
there you go, right?
40 carries as opposed to 24 passes, and they beat them 16-10 in an ugly game. So there's your formula.
Yeah, I was going to say, what's the recipe look like?
Grant and Danny on the Fan, let's give you an audio vault next. Put together a couple of clips for you, including, speaking of rookie quarterbacks, a couple members of this rookie QB class. We'll give you an audio vault next on G&D. In case you're curious, I'm wearing a red T-shirt. It's a Dylan Cruz Welcome to the Show Nats giveaway shirt. Khaki shorts and black kicks. Although, if you were watching the show on the 106.7 The Fan YouTube page, you'd already know
that. You already know that, right? It's available. I got my DTL shirt. Shout out to DTL in Fairfax. It's about pickleball, and it's a lifestyle. It's not a big deal. And I got my blue shorts on and my Skechers sneakers, which are almost done. It's almost time for them to be put out to pasture.
Skechers sneakers just sounds like a funny thing to say. Maybe things have changed on the Skechers front over the years, but when I think of that, I think of like some tall shoes the Spice Girls wore or something.
Right, some like weird platform deals.
When I was in school, people didn't wear Skechers shoes.
Me neither.
Maybe it changed.
I don't know that it did. These were on sale in a major way from DSW.
I mean, I think of my days wearing Velcro shoes where it's like I would stomp up and like a fire truck would light up. And so
I get sized for Velcro shoes. Were you around a couple years ago when I had those white sillies?
I remember the white sillies.
Whatever happened to those? I need to try to find some Velcro shoes again.
Hey, we Christmas coming up here.
I'm a big Velcro shoe guy. Let's get to our audio vault. We have scoured the internet, all corners of the web, to give you some entertaining audio on Grant and Danny. Let's get to it. I swear I've got candy in the audio vault, you creep. What a creepy intro that is.
It's like a John Waters type bit.
Whoever put that together really thought like this was supposed to be a scary Halloween segment.
Well, it'll make great sense in a couple of weeks when it is Halloween.
That's true.
Other than that,
there's going to be like two audio vaults in the middle and end of October where we're going to be like, this is so on brand. Feels like Hocus Pocus is in the background.
Vincent Price and the Thriller video is about to start.
I've got a puppy. Do you want to see it come this way?
Jeez.
All right. Audio vault time. Al Michaels.
Here we go.
On the call. Thursday Night Football, Amazon Prime. Now, I always provide this caveat. Like the rest of you, grew up a big Al Michaels guy. One of the great legends in play-by-play history. I actually had the great fortune of working with Al Michaels, believe it or not, at one point in time as a young buck doing some things for ABC Sports. It's just not the time where Michaels is one of the best anymore. You occasionally have to shake him and wake him up to let him know there's a football game going on. Little more energy on this beautifully designed touchdown to James Cook, please.
Pass to the outside, wide open, inside the 10. And James Cook takes it in.
Sorry to bother you.
Football, man. We're all excited. We're here. It's 0-0. It's the first quarter. It's 5 minutes in. It's Thursday Night Football. It's Bills, Dolphins. Tua is still on the field, by the way. This is the division. These are the two heavyweights. Like, yeah, man, Thursday night, national TV. And he might, by the way, he scored 3 minutes ago. He's dancing. He's already back on the sideline. James Cook, touchdown. I don't know what to say. It's just, it's a tough watch sometimes with my guy.
So that one I can take because it was correct.
It's an okay call.
Yeah, if not.
Lacking energy.
Yeah. I mean, the other one's where he's like, it's a touchdown, and the dude is down 10 yards in front of the one or whatever, and everyone's like marking it, and they're getting up to snap the next play. Those are the ones I'm just kind of like, what are we supposed to do here? Hall of Famer, one of the greats.
Loved this clip. I thought it was a 10 out of 10. Bo Nix at the podium after the game, answering a question about one of his two interceptions that proved costly for the Denver Broncos.
Bo, can you take us through the interception in the end zone?
Yeah. Drop back, threw it to the other team.
That'll do it. A lot of times I don't like when players are smart asses, like, hey man, let's be a pro, whatever. I didn't take this, though, as him being a jerk. I mean, he clearly is being short and annoyed by the question, but it was succinct enough. He answered it. I mean, it also works as an answer, essentially. Like, he could give you more. They were running quarters. I didn't see it. He's basically like, I made a dumb play. And he did it in very few words. I laughed when I watched that.
Yeah, I took it more as the smartassery, where it's like, I'm not answering your question, guy. I threw it to the other team. Yeah. You want to bring up other old stuff? You want to talk about when my dog got hit by a car when I was a kid? Like, it sucked. I'm upset about it. But, yeah, I don't know. It's if you're going to do it, go ahead and go down with it.
So this audio is a little bit tougher to hear. This is from a video, like mic'd up on the field. I don't know how many people have seen this, but this has been making the rounds today. So this is CJ Stroud and Caleb Williams embracing after the game. You've seen a million of these coming together at the 50-yard line for the handshake. And what happens is CJ Stroud tries to talk to Caleb Williams, and he's kind of in his ear, and Williams pulls away and like starts walking away. And CJ Stroud kind of grabs Caleb and pulls him back in. He's like, no, listen, man. And all I can say is the video, like Caleb Williams is kind of looking off into the distance, and I know he just lost, and he's not in a good mood, and I get all that. I'm not trying to make a mountain out of a molehill, but watch it. I posted this clip at Grant H. Paulson on Twitter if you want to. There's just something about Stroud, who was in your shoes last year and did an amazing job, like is now for 1 year been one of the top five quarterbacks in the league, trying to be instructive. Like, we're in the fraternity together. We just stopped playing the game, so now you and I are on the same team as quarterbacks in this league. And it just seems like Caleb Williams is kind of like acting as if I'm giving him advice. It was just a weird vibe. Listen to this.
Good job out there, bro.
Yeah.
Hey,
keep going.
Stop taking those hits.
Yeah, I know. Right?
Hey,
yeah.
Learn from those mistakes. And everything that you got, bro, is in you already. Brady, bro. You're going to be a hell of a player in this league.
Yep.
All right, boy.
Appreciate it.
For sure.
I don't know.
Like, you don't get it from that.
You don't.
What's happening is Caleb Williams is like the way my son looks at me when I'm like, do you have any homework, buddy? Do you want to stop playing video games and do it right now? Like this eye roll. What is this boomer doing talking to me about this? That's the look he's giving. I'm going, I get that you're pissed, but damn, dude.
Grant and Danny, Audio Vault 106.7, The Fan, as we break down some of the top audio we found on the web. Yeah, the vibe it gives off is, I don't want to have this conversation right now. And CJ Stroud's like, come here, man. And he like pulls him back in. And as he's doing it, Caleb Williams is kind of like looking off in the distance. And I don't know if he feels like he's being sunned or like in the back of his mind. It's like, dude, we're both 22. Mm-hmm. Get away from me. But like, CJ Stroud's got it figured out. You do not. He's just trying to help. I don't know. And I asked the question when I posted, is this an odd interaction or no? And people have had different responses, so everyone can have their own opinion there. But it just came off weird to me. That's all I can say.
Yeah, it's atypical. I will also say that I understand immediately after a game where you're beyond frustrated, totally, so furious, the last thing I want to hear is like, hey, man, here's some constructive criticism. Oh, leave me alone. So I understand it from that perspective,
too. Except that Caleb Williams is about to go exchange jerseys with some guy from USC. And then they're going to get down on their knees and sign them and take big pictures and smile and get in the prayer circle. You know, it's not like right after these games, mm-hmm, on the field, these guys are all fighting back tears, especially in week two.
Yep.
You know, you see coaches, you see quarterbacks, you see players, there's laughs, and everyone's having a good time, and we're bro-hugging, and we're praying together, and we're taking pictures with each other. You know, Daniels and neighbors, like that the post game is not a combative, angry time. Now, I'm not saying he wasn't having annoyed emotions after a national TV dud. I'm sure he was. I just feel like that's part of the day. You know you're going to meet with this guy. You're going to have this quick convo. I would think you'd want to be all ears. Like, dude, how'd you do this? How are you pulling this off? So, wanted to play that. Lastly, this was a late addition. Malik Willis. I thought this was excellent. Willis, who got his first win as a starting quarterback with the Green Bay Packers this past weekend, is likely to start for them as they go back to where he was drafted in Tennessee. The Titans never really gave him a chance. You know, they buried him on the depth chart. They moved on from him. So he was asked if this game means more, if he gets to start for Green Bay at the Titans and try to beat the team that never gave him a shot. And I thought his answer was beyond classy.
No, I could care less, bro. I think I got paid the whole time I was there, bro. I'm more than blessed for the opportunity they've given me, and they brought me into this league, you know, whether those guys are there or not. You know, that organization, they took a shot on me, Miss Amy, and they did a great job by me, all I'm concerned.
Pretty nice.
Yeah, good for him.
Hey, they paid me. They drafted me. I don't know him at all. Never met him, never talked to him. I remember, like, there was that picture at the combine when he, like, stopped and, like, gave gear. I don't remember what it was. It was, like, gear or food to, like, a homeless person. Remember that?
That became a big
viral story when he was at the combine. And between that and this, like, that's enough for me. I like this kid.
Yeah, I would have said, yes, this matters so much to me. Like, you know what I mean? Like, all the games do. This is pro football. It's really important. I'm fighting for my career. But that one means extra. So good for him for taking the incredibly high road.
And I don't even know. I mean, it might not, like, I would imagine it means more to him, but he might actually feel that way.
No, totally.
They drafted me in the third round. They paid me millions of dollars. And I'm in the NFL, and I went to Liberty. I didn't think I was going to be in the NFL before last year I was there. Mm-hmm. Whatever. Maybe that really is how he feels. That's a quarterback-heavy audio vault there, guys, on Grant and Danny here on The Fan. We'll get you ready for the Nats game before we get out of here. But next, I want to get into the most likely quarterback to be benched. Some odds came out today. We'll talk about that. And we've got tickets to the Caps 50 Fest. We'll give a pair away as soon as we return right here on The Fan.
If you want the real story behind the NFL, you need the Stinkin' Truth Podcast. Three-time Super Bowl champ Mark Schlereth breaks down the biggest plays, the biggest games, and the untold stories that make this game what it is. Follow the Stinkin' Truth in the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.